This is David Colburn from the University of Florida. It is January 29th, 2009, at 9:50 a.m. in the morning. I'm interviewing Mr. Joseph Kowalski, who had a distinguished military career in World War II. Joe, if we could get started, and maybe you just identify yourself, and we'll start from there.
I'm Joe Kowalski, and I was born in Webster, Massachusetts in 1918, and I've been living there with my mother, single mother at the time, and I was adopted by a Polish military man who was in the Canadian Army up in World War I, and he came over wounded from the war, and he came into the States, and he married my mother at that time, which was, I was 3.5 years old at the time, and remember the wedding at that. I spent all my life in Webster, first 22 years, and I went to the grammar schools and played baseball there a lot. That's about all I did as sports, because it was right near baseball field.
What time was this, Joe? What years were these when you were in school?
In school, well, from, I said 1918, I was born when I went to school. I couldn't even, my grandfather was blind, so I had to take care of him after I was going to school, grammar school, and I had to speak Polish to him because he didn't know how to read or he couldn't see to read and things like that. But I went to school when I was 6 years old, so that's since 1924 to 25. I went to high school to as far as the sophomore year, and finally that was it. Depression time, I went out, I quit school at that time trying to get a job. I never could get the job. So I got into the service in 1949. That was when I was about 22, 23 years old. I enlisted, that was before Pearl Harbor. And I enlisted at that time, and I went into the service at 19th of November of 1940.
So, and what made you decide to volunteer at that point?
I was going to volunteer sooner, but my father says, you wait a while, they'll get you anyway. So I waited for about a year. I was thinking of going to. And then when they started the draft board, I went in and volunteered in 1940. That was a year before Pearl Harbor. So and I went drafted in Worcester, Massachusetts, which was the induction center.
Did you do this because you were looking for work and right. This was a good way to get work?
Right. I was looking for work and couldn't get it. When I did get it, was in a weave shop in Connecticut, which across the border from us. And I stayed there for about 2 or 3 years, but I wanted to get into the service because my father was a World War I veteran, a Canadian, but got wounded in France, and that's how came to America.
Was he still alive at the time that you signed up for the military?
Oh, yeah, he was alive, and he told me to wait a while, and then I did, and then I went in on my own, and he was alive, and even after the war, he was still alive.
Was he cautionary to you about going in, given his experience, or did he think this was a good decision?
No, he thought I was doing all right, but he thought I'd get in, wait a while. He knew that the war was coming over, you know, he was one of them kind of fellas. And he's a very nice guy, he took care of me right, you know. And we enjoyed our life and everything together.
But I guess because he was Canadian, the Canadians were already in the war, weren't they? Because the British were already fighting the Germans at that in 1940.
Yeah, he was in Poland at the time when he joined the army.
Oh, and, yeah, I was talking about World War II, though. At the time of World War II in 1940, when you signed up, the British were already at war with the Germans and hunkered down because the Germans were bombing
Poland,
their cities.
Yeah,
and invading Poland. And
he had two brothers in the Polish army.
Oh, I see.
And he fought against his brothers. So that was an experience that he had.
In World War I, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when I joined, the 1st Division. They were stationed in Fort Devens, Massachusetts. The one battalion of the 1st Division, 26th Infantry, was stationed there. Because they were spread in Georgia, Benning, they were up in Plattsburgh, New York, and Fort Dix. And then right after the war, when the war, Pearl Harbor was, the girl came into Fort Devens. They built the whole place up. The whole division was at Fort Devens from 1941 all the way up till we left a year later for England. And I started with them in that time, November 1941.
And you were what, just an infantry soldier at that point?
I was in the company H of the 26th Infantry of 1st Division, which came out here. The 1st Division was composed of the 16th was coming in from Fort Dix, 18th was coming in from Georgia or one of the other places, and the last part of the 26th came in from Plattsburgh, New York. So that was the whole division, the three infantry outfits out of there.
Do you remember who the commander was of the 1st at that time?
Commander of the 1st, I don't know. I just read the whole thing.
That's okay. We can check that out.
I know the first one that to me was Teddy Roosevelt Jr. He was a commander of the whole 1st Division after a while. And the captain of our company was Crawford. I remember that. He came in. He was there at the time I came. And he left when we hit Africa. I remember him.
How was the training at Fort Devens? Was it pretty rugged, or?
Well, see, that was a regular army. There was no guys, that didn't know nothing about the guns. And I was in a heavy weapons machine gun company, Company H, 30 millimeter, and there was. A heavy weapons company. So actually, our company wasn't on foot. We had jeeps transporting us in battle and everything. So that made it pretty good. But I was, with the company all that time. And we came into Camp Landing here in 1942. And up here we came in from Fort Devens after a year and a half of training up there at Cape Cod and Dix and all them places, just landing maneuvers. That was before the war even started.
Now, landing maneuvers from coming from the water onto the land, that's what, the kind of training you were doing?
Yeah, we went to the Cape, we went to Charlotte, North Carolina, and things like that. So, that was and then when we came into Blanding, we had to set up camp, and I was on the first detail of the whole thing, and I'm helping them set up places, and I jumped off the truck with lumber, and I had a cartilage. I had to go to the hospital, have a cartilage taken out.
Oh my goodness.
I spent 8 weeks in a hospital here in Blanding. Got out, I went on a 10-day furlough, but only lasted 5 days. I was called back Fort Benning, Georgia, and that's our point. I got there, I had to go on light duty. I couldn't carry the machine gun anymore. So I was a runner, practically, between company and battalion. So I knew a lot of these officers on there. So from there, we went to, from Georgia, we went to Pennsylvania, and then down to New York on the Queen Mary. And that was the first troops going across.
And you sailed when on the Queen Mary?
In the August of 42.
August of 42.
Yeah. And we went into Scotland. From Scotland.
How long were you in Scotland, approximately?
Well, that's where we embarked from. And we went to Titwood Barracks in England. That's near Salisbury, out that way, on the coast. So we stayed there at Titwood Barracks for a couple of months. And then we went back to Scotland to get on the boats for Africa. So,
did you know where you were going?
No.
You didn't know where you were going?
We were told we were going. You know, the thing that, when I stop and think of it, we didn't ask questions about that, you know. They told us what they're going to do. Africa, what the heck is we're going to Africa for, you know. And so we got on Monica Bermuda, it was an English ship, I remember. But, you know, a lot of the stuff, I can't remember it or how we did it, but so many things that I remember of that. And it was... November 10th, no, 8th of 42 that we got into Oran and things like that.
So you landed in Oran of North Africa.
Right. Yeah. On November 10th, 8th. Yeah. 10th was Sicily, that's right. 8th of November, 42. I read a story about Africa would never even saw it, but that was a beautiful big beach, and we had not much opposition there. And that's when I start telling the story about all that.
So when you landed in Oran of North Africa, you didn't go into military action against the Germans at that point?
I don't know who would. No, I don't think it was because of the. I think it was the French. You know, I don't know who they were, but the first shell that fell, and I was in the advanced detail there, first battle right off, you know. And the first shell that landed was about 25, 30 feet away, maybe further. And I, like I said, I landed with a full field pack. I had toilet paper, and mattress cover, and my rifle, and a bicycle. I was a runner. Bicycle landed on the beach, and you know how long Clearwater Beach is.
Yes.
All that, you gotta get there. A little bit of, we didn't get to it much because it was there. And pushing the bicycle, I had about five. Full-filled packs on the bike, just push it. Oh, cool. You could ride it. And that shell landed, and it was a dud. So we were pretty lucky. So then engineers dismantled the dud, and there was a note in it.
A note?
Yeah. Polish military camp in Germany.
Is that right?
The Polish.
So the first thing you encountered is a Polish American. Oops. So the first encounter you have is with a artillery shell fired by Poles at a Polish American who's coming ashore with the 1st Infantry.
And there was a note in it, you know.
And a note in it
and
as
I
well.
And I could read it because I could read Polish at the time. So, I mean, that was an incident.
Sort of ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, and the people, we didn't. Just went right ahead on, nothing said. And the captain and lieutenant of our company, they go out someplace and they get captured the first day we were there. And we haven't seen them. I heard from them after the war, but that was...
But they were captured and they were held by the Germans throughout the war.
Yeah. A lieutenant and a captain. Yeah. Farrell, I don't think he made captain. Johnson did. I knew them both because I was company running. I knew these officers pretty good at that time. So that was the first thing that encountered there. We stayed in Oran. I'll tell you how long we stayed in around Oran. If you maybe read about it, Holy Cross from Worcester in Boston College on Thanksgiving Day always was a rivalry football team. And then they, after the game, Coconut Grove in Boston had a fire. They had a big fire after.
Oh, yes.
You remember it? Okay.
It so, burned down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They lost a lot of people there from both
Boston College and Holy Cross, yes.
And the thing, but it was, we got the newspaper clippings on that game at Christmas time. That's how much communication there was.
My goodness.
From Thanksgiving to Christmas, before we know about that fire and things like that. And we were still in Africa.
And you were in, did you stay in Algeria, in Oran, Algeria, the whole time?
Yeah, well, no, right after Christmas, we started going through all these places. I can tell you that, I had one of my grandsons, we get a lot of military things out of this book, you know, so...
So you're in the Battle of Long Top Hill in Algeria, right off the bat, weren't you, in early December?
This is all the way through, but we did organize them anyway. The Battle of Long Top Hill.
Yeah.
I don't remember Kasserine Pass. I remember that one. Battle of El Gat. I remember that. See, but a lot of these places, and it tells you the details, complete. You know,
what was your experience in fighting the Germans? And the others, soldiers that were fighting with them, were they tough?
The Germans. They were soldiers. They wasn't like these Japanese running the upper hill against the fire and you fire. These guys were soldiers. Himmler's country and with the tank commander of the Germans is him and Patton had a fight up off of the we could see off the hill. Tunisia Pass, Kasserine, Gasser, oh yeah, all them little towns I remember, but you know how many all that for the whole first division.
So the Germans were formidable opponents.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even the tank division. We had our tank outfit. When we landed, we had a 37-millimeter tank, you know? And that's a small tank gun, 50 caliber. So we sent them in. The first thing we got in that company, our company, we had that.
Okay, again, I'm with Joe Kowalski. We're talking about his military career in World War II. At this point, he's in Oran, Algeria, and they've encountered the Germans on December 22nd at Long Top Hill, and shortly in January of 1943, they'll confront the Germans again. And Joe, if you would repeat what the Germans were like to...
Well, this one, one outfit of our company was it, like I said, 50 millimeter gun to go against the tanks. And when they got there, they turned right around back. When they shot at the German tanks, it just bounced off like a ball. You know, couldn't even dent them. So that's we converted into a 50 caliber on a kitchen truck, and I was a gunner on the turret. And then they had to get a 37 millimeter gun against them. Tanks wasn't not too good, so they didn't do too much at that time.
So they were the equipment we had wasn't very good against the German tanks.
That's right. They couldn't even make a dent in them. Because, so that's why I went on as a gunner, a 50 caliber, but I wouldn't go against the tanks. I was just over. Working, you know, the terrains for them.
Supporting the infantry.
That's right, right.
Now, were you still running between units at this time, or were you permanently attached to?
Well, at this time, I'm attached to the gunner on the kitchen truck.
Okay.
He made a turret, and I had to guide them through from one place to the other. That I was there till the end of Tunisia, before we cleaned them out of there in Tunisia.
Well, you were in Tunisia, in Algeria for a good year, weren't you? Roughly, before you went on to Sicily.
Well, we went on to Sicily, though. Yeah, we weren't even in. We went into Sicily in July of.
So that's more like 7 months later,
yeah,
I guess, isn't
yeah.
it?
It says right here, July.
What were the conditions like in fighting in? Was there a lot of sand that you encountered in Algeria and Tunisia? Was it hot?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it wasn't that hot because this was in November, December,
okay.
January, February, March, you know. So the weather wasn't. In fact, I'll tell you, we camped in one place and we left our rifles outside our tents and against the tent, and there was frost on the guns. That was the only time we ever seen.
So it's quite cold or cool during the winter time there in northern Africa.
Yeah, that's right. Like I said, we had the guns. So don't leave any shoes outside the tent because they'll be gone in the morning.
What were the? What did you have adequate equipment at this time to fight? Did you have adequate equipment at this time to fight the Germans? I mean, you say you didn't have good guns to penetrate the
tank.
German armor.
No. Well, to me, we had the heavy weapon company that we had in the division is a 50 caliber machine gun, you know, but that wasn't good for a tank war. When Patton came in and drove into the tanks against... what was his name? The big
German general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of his name now, but I know pretty good by name.
Did the 1st Division suffer much casualties in Northern Africa?
Well, I can't say how many, but we were replaced 7 times during the whole war.
Say that again?
7 times we were replaced during the whole war.
Oh, during the whole course of the war.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were pulled off the front line 7 times? Is that what you're
saying? Well, no. We were pulled off the front line sometimes, but many times, like after we got done with Africa, we got replacements, you know, to go into Sicily, then we could.
Oh, I see. You were constantly adding new soldiers to replace injuries and deaths that occurred.
Well, one incident I tell you in my story that after I came back, I got hit in the arc and I came back. There's only 3 guys left that I knew out of the whole company.
The entire company, there are only 3 left that you had been with. And
I was 4 months in the hospital.
And this was this from North Africa?
No, this was after the...
Were there fellows that served with you, who were with you in North Africa, that stayed with you all the way through?
There was some.
To the end of the war?
There was some. Mostly kitchen help.
Mostly kitchen help.
Yeah, but 3 drivers, 3 guys that were jeep drivers that stayed all the way through, then even came back with me from when I flew back from Paris. But all the rest, always replacements. Some of them, when I was in the hospital, they went through Africa, Germany, Aachen, the first city that fell. And I was out of there. I had 7 battles out of, out of eight, so I missed that.
Mm-hmm. So you went from, you went in July, you went to Sicily.
Yes.
And did you, you must have had a beach landing at Sicily.
Yes, yeah.
Where did you land in Sicily?
Chile.
Okay.
Chile, Sicily, yeah.
And what were the conditions in Gila and Sicily, G-E-L-A, Sicily? What were the conditions like there and in Sicily generally?
Well, according to the way I read this book, and I just finished this, I didn't realize we had that many divisions in Sicily and doing the, going against the Germans and stuff, because the Italians were giving up quite a bit. And there,
did your unit have trouble landing? Like several of the units had trouble landing at Sicily.
Well, that's I couldn't understand. We didn't have no problem.
You had no problem.
But we came in at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And see what happened. I mean, how it worked. The 26th, which is my regiment, landed in Africa first. The 18th landed first in Sicily, and the 16th landed in Normandy.
Okay.
So that's the way it rotated, because three divisions there, you know.
And three regiments.
Yeah, regiments.
Yeah.
So we, when we landed in Sicily, it was 10 o'clock in the morning. The initial act was at 6:30 in the morning, you know. So I didn't realize that we didn't have that much opposition at first, but reading the book, the story of it, 45th Division was there, 3rd Division was there, and them guys were getting sort of beat up. And I didn't realize that I was running between the companies and stuff like that, and we did have opposition, and then we did lose men and things like that, but not as bad as we did in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed on there only 30 days.
In 30 days in Sicily. Mm-hmm. Now, Atkinson says that after a rocky start, the Sicilian campaign went pretty rapidly. Did you have after 30 days, were you still on the coast in Sicily?
No, we Etna, near the volcano up there, by Messina. I remember Messina and all through there, yeah. Captured the 16th Etna capitals, and then Sutuna, yeah, Messina, and I remember the Etna, the volcano out there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and so, we're being interrupted occasionally by, I don't know if that's an alarm buzzer or what that is, but, we are in Sicily with Joe Kowalski and his regiment, and they have defeated the Germans at Enna and Troina and Messina. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the Sicilian campaign in August 17th, 1943, is that when you rotate back to England for training for Normandy?
Yes, that's it. Went back on the English boat at that time. I don't remember the name of it, but we got back to Scotland, and then we went back, and we stayed in England till June 6th of that time. We stayed in a nice hotel.
Where were you staying? Where was the first located in? Oh, you must have been in several places. Were the regiments in several places in England?
Well, for 6 months there, we stayed in one place.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but went on little maneuvers around there and things like that.
Were you south of London, or were you north of London?
We were right on the coast.
Okay.
You know, out there, yeah. And we stayed there for almost 6 months.
And were you practicing seaborne invasions?
It was all barbed wire.
Barbed wire?
Yeah, you couldn't get on the, on the beach. You couldn't get on, it was all barbed wire. We were right on the beach up this little town, a real nice little town, and we stayed there for quite a while. They treated us great. And that's, we stayed there until June, sometime in June, we got there.
During this training period, it was said that the Americans and the British tried to hide the number of troops that were being trained in Britain.
Oh yeah. I didn't know how many we had, but our whole division was right there. We were all around that town up there, and we didn't have too much to do, just training a little bit and get replacements and equipment and uniforms and all things we got set up there. And we left there at the first of June, the first of because we were on the ship second or third day of June. Yeah.
And did you know where you were going?
Nope. And then the part of it is I got lost on land. I went to the dispensary and something, and I had to stay there for a while because
this was after you landed in France?
No.
Or before?
Before we even left. Yeah, that's right.
We were
going to the ships at that time. We left the town and I'm going, and everything was going all right. All of a sudden, I don't know what happened. I went to the dispensary. I remember that. I stayed there, and what they treated me for or something. Did I get dizzy or what or something? But I stayed there overnight. And then in the morning, practically whole division is practically gone on the ship. And I'm still there, but there were some guys there too. So I got on this boat with the outfit. I don't know who they were, but there was the first division of companies, And
so it wasn't your regiment or your platoon.
I wasn't my platoon, definitely. But that's the whole story. Is I got on with them, and there wasn't the last of them. And there was maybe 20, 25 of us on the landing craft. And that's where they had a problem operator. And I was supposed to get in there too at 10 o'clock in the morning from when we started. But our boat, he couldn't get in at the time. It's all.
There were too many ships there, so he couldn't get it in.
Ships there, tanks there. Trucks there, all.
Had you ever seen anything quite like it with all the ships there?
No, it was fantastic. And we were on that landing craft from 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I was supposed to land at 10. He couldn't get in, so he backed out. I got it in my story there. He backed out and says he can't get in. So he goes down all afternoon looking for a place. He sees a spot, he says, I can get it much closer here. So, bingo, he goes. He did get in quite close. We got wet up to our knees, that was good, And this was 6-7 o'clock at night.
And you came ashore at Utah Beach?
I came ashore with the 49th Division.
And you came ashore at Utah,
yeah.
At Normandy. Yeah. And your commander at that time was General Roosevelt.
No.
It was not Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy was transferred to the 4th Division.
Okay.
After Sicily.
Okay.
Yeah, he...
So he commanded you through Sicily, and then he was transferred to the 4th.
Yeah, but he didn't want to get transferred. Him and Bradley had some talk about it. After we cleaned out Sicily, he says, guys, have a great time. Don't have to wear leggings. You don't have to do this. Bradley or somebody coming, you got to be a soldier. So Teddy was shipped out, but that's another story with him.
So what was it like when you came ashore? Was there a lot of German artillery, machine gun fire?
There was, at that time, I think they spread them out. And this guy brought us in. There was nothing against us.
There was no opposition?
No, there was no opposition there. So we all had to go to the left of it, because the 29th was then they got a big shellacking.
This was at Omaha Beach. The 29th was hit hard, and you guys were moving in that direction to relieve them, to help them.
No, we were going in the opposite direction when we got on shore. We walked back to our own outfit, see. So we had to go to the left, and they were down to the south of us, you know, from what the way it landed. But I don't know how I walked all night, or when did we eat, or when did we stop. But the following day, about noon time, I got back to my outfit. And I didn't know hardly anybody around there at that time. Waited till the next day when the trucks came in, kitchen trucks, supply trucks, and that's when I hopped on with them again.
So then you captured Comar?
Yeah, Comar.
Yeah.
And the first city that fell, that took ours is Comar that I know of. And then from then on, I stayed with the kitchen and supply trucks and running. You know, we had to be the runner, but that was between all them.
So you were running between units?
Yeah. Battalion units, mm-hmm. Battalion and company.
Now, you weren't on your bicycle then, were
no,
you?
No, I didn't.
You were walking.
Once I got off that sand beach in Africa, that bike was gone. I said, I can get faster with that. Because there's hills, and, you know, bicycle was no good to that. I don't know how they gave me, because I was the last guy going off, I think, and they gave that to me. And that I didn't mind.
So in the course of a day, how often would you go back and forth between the units?
Oh, often. You mean running
between them, yeah.
Oh, often.
And what were you doing when you ran from one to the other? What information were you conveying to the other unit?
Well, just what the company was doing, like where's the supply truck, where's the kitchen truck car, and things like that.
You know? Okay.
And go between companies, E company, where's yours, and this, and the company commanders would tell the, and the battalion commanders, and things like that.
So you were making sure in your conversations with the various units they were properly supplied, that they had the food and resources.
Whatever message he had me to get, like the E company, or an E, G, and F company, they were all rifle, and company H was heavy weapons, you know, and that was all one battalion. So it was things of what they wanted to do, because you didn't have communication otherwise. Once you got settled, you had telephone copy, but before mm-hmm. that is
before
set
you were
up,
settled,
yeah,
you needed runners.
That's mm-hmm. that's it. And you do it from one to the other. Mailman, you know, see where is he and things like that.
How was the opposition from the Germans in those initial days? Were you capturing many? Were you losing a lot of men?
We lost a lot of men. Not many in all too there. There's no question about that. Like I said, you couldn't get in shore even, because bodies and the tanks and trucks and everything were already down there. So that's why this guy pulled out. Whether he pulled out or didn't want to go in or something, but he says he couldn't get in, so he was an Englishman. So when he pulled out and he went down there further, and it was 6-7 o'clock at night, he says, I found a place that he couldn't go in. So whoever was in charge of us, I don't even know who they were. He was some kind of an officer. He says, go ahead. And it pulled in pretty close, and went off, and that was it. But that's the beginning of that part of it.
Mm-hmm. And then you broke out of Normandy. And where did the first go from Normandy? Did you go toward Paris?
Well, I think the first thing I remember of is that July operation, the Cobra breakout from Normandy. Comar was the first city that fell, yeah. And we were going, and I remember St. Louis was the big bomb that the Air Force bombed out.
Yeah,
St. Lo, yeah. And we were about 5 miles behind the line, but we could see the whole bombing I nearly got all out. You know, this city was all out. So after the bombing, we were there from 10 o'clock in the morning, I thought about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we went through, and I have it in my papers that I wrote up, that we went through St. Louis. It was annihilated. Not which. Riding through, they find a cow on the telephone wires.
A cow on the telephone wires, wow.
Concussion.
Just blown up in the air.
Yeah, that's a question they ask me a lot. Hey, there was maybe 500 bombers at that time, you know, just knocking that city off because they were supplied depot there or something, you know.
Were there, did you encounter French people, families, or as you went through?
They were very, they were so glad to see us. They were glad to see us, yeah. They go to the cities up there, on the streets with whatever they had or something. We'd give them chocolate, candies or something we had. And at that time, it was great. Even going through Belgium, the same thing was just, they were so glad to see us and things like that. And I remember I was with the kitchen at that time because that's no more, you know, the company already writing it. No, we were going through the city of Liège. On the border of Germany and stuff. And I was with the kitchen truck that time. And we stopped there and ran into the a family that owned a brewery in the city. So we stopped and the mess sergeant gets over and talks to the guy and come on, he says, come on in the place and have something to eat. So we all go, there's about 10 of us, get this chef out and crepe Suzette. Crepe Suzette? What the hell is a crepe Suzette at that time to me? I didn't know what that was, so it was great. So he gave him a 5-gallon tank of gas and the guy was so happy because his trucks were running, he had no gas, but he brought us in there. And that was a nice.
So did you get, you got food and did you get beer from him? Did he have any beer?
I don't remember what we drank, but it was such a surprise to what we were eating, you know.
So you gave him a gasoline for some good food.
Yeah, they gave him gasoline. What the best sergeant had. And the supply sergeant, Motorpulia, was there too, so that was all right. So right after that, we had Liège, who was right on the border. So we had to we're moving out. So this was about 7 o'clock at night, and we were in the night.
This was what time of the year? This was in,
in
the fall of
1944? Yeah, across, yeah. Right, September. I think it's September 15th or 16th. That we were going through at Liège after we ate. We were a nice building and everything. And I used to play the violin years ago. We found a violin in that place, a beautiful violin. And it had a balcony and the guys all done. I used to get up and play the violin and so they clap and then I go and come back again. And that night, we goes into Aachen, we're hitting Aachen, midnight or something, bingo, I'm heading this kitchen truck, 250-ton truck, you know, getting them into position and everything, bingo, the concussion of its shell drops near me, hits me against a tree, and the truck hits me beside me. So that was the end of my career for combat.
What sort of injuries did you suffer?
I had a broken back, pelvis, and a hip. I spent 4 months in the hospital.
Where did they send you back to England?
No, Cardiff, Wales.
Cardiff, Wales. Okay.
On a ambulance on the board. I was on a board playing all this time. Then a Paris plane, and then again Cardiff, Wales, and I spent 3 months, a little over 3 months in the hospital. And this time there's the Battle of the Bulge. Instead of sending me home, they send me back to the front lines to the same company. And that was pathetic.
Were you back there after the Battle of the Bulge? Or?
No, I was right there when they were coming back.
They were
in the front line. But see, they didn't have a place for me, so I had to stay with their kitchen and company commanders, their place and all that. So I stayed with them till we went back and got replaced at Buttenbach. Now there's another city that
What kind of condition were you in? Were you fully recovered when you went back to the front lines?
I did. I went back. I didn't even bother. I didn't even have clothes for cold weather. I had to get equipped from everything. I didn't have anything.
Yeah. But how was your back and your pelvis? Were you
okay? It still bothers me.
Still bothers you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every day of the week. But I mean, not that I can't do anything or something like that, but I went back, and instead of going in as a runner or anything, I went in as a gunner, but they gave me a section sergeant, and because nobody there I knew outside, maybe 3 foot people of our outfit, so I had to take over on the lines. So then again, I was a line soldier.
So you're a line soldier, and this was after the bulge.
Yeah, we went back to town up there, that city, Buttenbach, it says. I don't know if it's still here. Architecting, got the next time. But
it says the German attack was repulsed at Buttenbach in December 22nd.
Yeah. I missed Hürken Forest. That was a bad one that they had, too. General counterattack, yes, all that, yeah.
So,
Buttenbach, Belgium. So that's where I went back to the lines, and I was...
And then you were with the first when you penetrated the Siegfried Line at Steinbach.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How was the fighting there?
Well, you see, like the rifle companies were always in front of us. You know, we were supporting the rifle company, so we didn't get too much flak out there until we got to the Bone Bridge.
Okay.
Going over the water there, we had to go over the bridge there, and then I don't know. The Germans just left the bridge, and it was easy to get over that. It was in Bonn too, and
so the British, the Germans left the Bonn Bridge,
not completely demolished. And the engineers did it. Great job in putting it fast.
Putting an emergency bridge up so that you could get across.
Yeah, we got across that in the morning too. Yeah, I remembered a lot of that stuff, you know. There's a lot of stuff that I can't even remember.
So that's how you broke across, that's how you got across the Rhine.
Yeah.
And then into the German heartland.
Yeah, Bonn, there was the city, I think.
Yeah, Bonn was the capital for a long time after during the Cold War. Now they've moved it back to Berlin.
Yeah, that's just where we went over the bridge.
But Berlin was the capital at that time. Bonn became the capital during the Cold War. And so you were involved in the fighting all the way through Paderborn, the Heart Mountains.
I don't know. I don't remember that.
Yeah. But you reached your unit reached the Czechoslovakian border.
That's where we ended up in. Yeah. Run into Czechoslovakia.
Once you broke out of Bonn, did the Germans pretty much collapse?
More or less, you got a lot of kids, you know. But you had to be careful going there. If you capture a city or something, you go into a house or something, you had to be careful because maybe her husband's there, and maybe he's in Germany army or something. So there was a little different... In France, you could go in and no problem, you know, captives get him. Or if there was a German in the area, you knew about it. It's like one place we went to feel it. France, six German soldiers dead You know, we went in there, right after St. Louis. We went in there and pitch dark. So we camped there overnight, wake up in the morning, the six of them dead. I get two wristwatches, a Bulova and an Elgin. Now, how the hell did they get them?
Mm-hmm.
So I got them. They were dead already, you know. But that was a little different. But when you get to Germany, you had to be careful. Like I said, their family might have been in there, and they maybe had children and stuff like that.
And they wanted to kill a GI if they could kill one.
Yeah,
so you had to be real cautious.
Yeah, you know, they weren't friendly, things like that. So when at the Czechoslovakia, when we got there on the border, it was all pretty good because you had the Czechs there. An incident that I have in the of that place, like I said, I was a section sergeant at that time, so I had to drill troops and things. And out there, by a camp, is a big pond, I don't know. And right there was a little factory of, I don't know what they did there, but it was, and the Polish were captured, you know.
We're working there, yeah, in that factory. Mm-hmm.
And so this place was nice. It's, well, the war was ended there. So we got friendly with the people and everything, the Czechoslovak. And this one girl, oh, I don't know, she must have been 20, 25 years old, real worker, Polish. He worked there as a captive of Poland or something. And I got to know her and I could speak to her and everything, and so everything was going good. And this pond was quite big, you know, maybe it's like this atrium floors. And she says to me, "You see that girl there across the water?" I says, "Yeah." And so this girl's name was Frida. I remember a lot of this stuff I don't. And she says, "Watch this." So I says, "Okay." And there's a couple of guys with us, and her and maybe a couple of her friends. And this girl's a nice looking girl from a distance. And she says to me, she says, "Watch, because I speak Polish and I'm Polish with her." She goes across the street, gets this girl, rips her clothes off and throws her in the water.
My goodness.
He comes back. The girl is screaming like anything. And this one comes back to me. I says, "What the hell did you do that for, you know, in Polish?" She says, "She used to fraternize with the soldiers here, German soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Germans," she says. "And she made us do a lot of stuff that we didn't like."
Oh.
I says, "Holy mackerel."
Yeah.
Yeah, but... then after...
Well, they had long memories, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then the thing is that when that happened, there was something about that.
But that's now, were you involved in the liberation of Falkenau, the internment concentration camp?
No. We did get a lot of prisoners out of that, the last part of it. I had two... German Lugers after that, and I did get a couple out of them. But I didn't bother too much with that after, because we were there, and guys were playing ball and stuff like that after that things, and we were involved. And a lot of guys were being sent back, holding us back. So I wonder why you're holding us. All hiked, you know, we high points we got for all that stuff.
Yeah, for all the battles you'd been in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were ready to go home.
Yeah, they kept us, so they sent us to Paris to go with Eisenhower's convoy back. Eisenhower's in England celebrating, and we're in Paris.
Celebrating.
Yeah.
And, but ready to go home.
Yeah, we could only take 40 pounds of anything we had back with us. So Lugas and that stuff. I didn't want none of that stuff and things like that. And That's Mike. He's a big manager here. And the thing is...
So how did you get home?
We stayed in Paris for 4 days and we flew home.
Okay.
And this is a
and did you fly? Where did you fly to when you flew home?
Presque Isle, Maine.
Oh, you flew into Maine?
Yeah, but that Eisenhower flew into Washington.
Right.
But there was three planes of us. We had a B-42 plane. There was about 20 of us, 15 or 20. Must have been the last batch of us, you know. And we flew back, no seats. We landed in the...
No seats on the plane?
No seats. We didn't care. We stopped in the island there to gas up, what the heck, it was midnight.
Not in Greenland or Iceland?
No, in the Atlantic down. I get that all written down someplace.
When you got to Maine, what did you do?
Well, this girl come up and kissed me. Welcome, Saturday, on a Saturday, and that was in the papers, in Boston papers.
That's a great picture.
Yeah, and I was one of the gang. And then from there, we went back to Fort Devens, and then that was a discharge place for us, Fort Devens.
Well, that was good for you because you were in Webster, so
yeah.
You didn't have... So when you got home in Webster, what did you do?
Well, before I got discharged, everybody got discharged. They kept me back at Fort Devens for a month. They thought I needed a little more after my accident.
Your medical, a little more medical attention?
Yeah. So I didn't get out till a month later. The guys I went with, they got discharged at Fort Devens. I did too, but they got out and I had to stay there for a month. But it didn't make any difference because I had a place to go. My folks used to come visit me at the hospital in Devens after. And I got out on July 14th. The others got out on July 10th or 12th, or whenever this landed,
mm-hmm.
a couple of days after this.
Now, did you, once you got home, did you have a job or?
No. Because I left with the job that I had in the mill, I didn't care to go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
My folks says, you take it easy for a couple of months. So I says, okay. And I met this, I used to dance a lot anyway, you know, and I used to go, and I was the first guy back, you know. I was the first guy to leave, and I was
the first veteran back in Webster.
Yeah, you know, from the thing. So, geez, a bunch of girls in there. So they met this girl, and I says to her, I says, great, you know. And I says, I'm either going to get married this year or I'm going back in the service from July. I could re-enlist. They gave me 6 months to re-enlist and gave me a good thing on it. So we met in 13 weeks. We got married. So that was the end of my army career. But I tell you.
Now, where did you find work finally?
Oh, in the cities, in the town around there.
And what did you do?
It was in the mill.
Back in the mill again, huh?
Yeah, back in the mill. Cotton mill. So,
right.
And it wasn't too big of a job. So we got married and we lived in Webster for just a couple of months. My wife and my mother didn't hit it off together too much and things like that. So so we moved up to Lynn.
To Lynn, Mass.
Mm-hmm. Her folks, their brothers and and we lived there. There again, the job I had was in a shoe shop and things like that. But there was a great baseball team up there in Lynn, Mass, you know, at the time, and Pesky and guys, and I worked in the shoe shop. But then I went to get evaluated for a job through the GI Bill. So either you'd be a, barber or a cook.
A barber or a cook, huh?
Yeah, that's value. So I took the cook.
And so you took the cook option.
And I took it. I stayed 2 years up there before we moved back to on the seashore. I couldn't take it anymore, you know, and got sore throat and stuff. So we went back to Worcester, Mass.
Okay.
That's a suburb. I mean, Webster is a suburb of
Worcester, yes.
Yeah. So I went there after the first, well, Trish was born there in Lynn, Mass, up there. And we went there, and I got under the GI Bill, bought a house up there, and spent a lot of years there.
Now, did you, when did you start having reunions of the unit?
Oh, this is Pershing's, right. General Pershing's outfit.
Yeah, it's General Pershing's 1st Division, right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then we.
So did you have annual?
But I didn't go too much because I was working. I just had the children and under GI Bill and stuff, you know, there wasn't any money. We went to first reunion was in Boston, Massachusetts at the time. After that, they had a year. And then when the kids got out of college and we were married and we settled pretty good and did things. So I started in San Jose, California was my, I think was my first one. After that, I would go every year someplace.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are your reflections on all of this, Joe, as you look back on it? A major part of your life.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a great life. I had 61 years with my wife. And if it wasn't for her, I'd never been there, you know. But now, up here, well, Trish got me up here because I was down there alone. You've got to be here, you know, where your kids are and everything. So, yeah, my kids, one's in California most of the time, in Vermont. The other one's in Ohio or New York. They're babysitting all the time. And so I go a lot to these conventions and stuff like that, and they come with me once in a while. this is our first division. It comes out 4 times a year.
The report and newspaper on the first division.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and this is all over the world.
Right. Well, there's so many veterans.
We had over 900 and some at the reunion this year.
Is that right? My goodness.
Yeah, we always had it in the 800 and stuff. Well, here we go. This year we went. This is us, and I'm the only guy out of the 26th.
That's still that was attending. You were the only fellow out of the 26th.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this is the girl that is here with me now.
Well, did you fellows, you know, have a sense after World War II that you had fought the good war for the betterment of not only the United States, but for the world in general.
And you know, I
did. Did you all feel this?
Not till lately, but I'm telling you, I see these people come up to me. Thank you, you know. In that, I says, thank you. I says, I thank you. You stayed here, gave me everything I needed. I said, wasn't for you, Army. Well, thank you for doing it.
Yeah.
I get so many. It gave me tears in my eyes when I hear that they don't want to support the troops more or less, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't too many of us guys left, and everybody's get here, you know. But
I think there's a sense, Joe, that America owes a particular debt of responsibility for the troops who fought in World War II. And in addition, it was sort of the last good war we fought,
Korea,
Vietnam, Iraq.
But
there was so much debate over whether we should have been there in the first place in any of those wars.
That's right. But see, I don't think the government or army owes you a penny. They don't owe me nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I don't think that's the way the American people see it.
I know they don't, but that's the way I feel about it. I mean, I went in there, I didn't know anything about army or anything. I went in there without a question and doing, and that's it. Yeah. But this guy here writes this more on D-Day, more about D-Day than anything I've ever read. And it's a terrific. I mean, I was at the time. At the time, I was there with what he wrote about, and it made me feel pretty good.
And this was written by Kevin Ostra.
Whoever he was.
And appeared in the July 1990 issue of World War II magazine about the invasion of the 1st Division at Normandy at Omaha Beach.
Yeah.
So you were at, I misspoke when I said you were at Utah, you were at Omaha Beach.
Well, that's where the division went.
Yeah.
But I got the other one because that's where the 29th Division was.
Yeah.
And that's one of the better articles on Normandy Beach that I've read. I mean, he names the generals, he names everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know about the generals and things like that, but I didn't know who they were. This here is...
You have some nice pictures of various places you were, don't you?
Yeah, this is... See, we get the calendar October, the 1st Division, every year. You get a calendar. They tell you where you were at that time.
Yeah, that's good for one's memory, isn't it, to have the calendar saying where you were at this time in 1943 or 44.
Yeah, every day where we were. But see, now that Vietnam is taking over all our activities.
I bet, because those are veterans who are my age.
Yeah.
They're probably pretty involved, aren't they? Actually, I was with the 1st Division at Tay Ninh briefly in Vietnam.
Oh, was that right?
Yeah. I wasn't formally assigned to them, but I was resupplying them. My unit was resupplying them.
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing is, we have that every 4 months, you know, the thing comes. And now this is where we had over 900. And we had these guys come in from Vietnam, not Vietnam, but from... Afghanistan and Iraq and Germany, we still got our division there.
Yes. Yes.
You know, we captured Germany.
Right.
And if we didn't get Normandy, we'd be talking German today. I told them that.
I know it. Well, thank goodness we didn't. Yeah. Well, this is David Colburn finishing up my interview with Joe Kowalski about his experiences before, during, and immediately after World War II. Thank you very much, Joe.
Well, thank you for...
Pleasure.
It was a pleasure.